Good evening, I'm Monica. A few things I want to get out of the way. I'm nervous. I've been restless and anxious, but I want to say thank you to my amazing sponsor for asking me to speak. I didn't know what I was going to say tonight, and I want to thank all of you for being here this evening, all the newcomers and the out-of-towners and the first-time visitors. Welcome. Wednesday, a few more details before I start. I went to bed and I told my husband, I don't know what I'm going to say for 30 minutes. And it threw me for a tailspin. I thought, I don't even know what I'm going to wear. And I went to bed really early. I needed some rest at 8:30. And I woke up from a super deep sleep. I thought I'd been asleep at least 9 hours. And I woke up and I thought, oh, I hope it's not 4:15. Please don't let it be 4:15, because that's when I get up. And it was only 10:27. And I could not go back to sleep because the rest of my mind went into a tailspin of what I was going to share and if you liked me or if I was going to please you or if people were going to even understand what I said, or I'm still stuck in, I'm the only one who's ever experienced these things. I know I hear a lot of shares, and I think it's given me the strength to stand up here because other people have experienced the things that I have, but I haven't really spoken that deeply about them. So I couldn't go to sleep. I was saying everything I wanted to share in my head, and I finally went back to bed at 2:30, and then the next day I missed a meeting in the morning and I just didn't want to get up. I was exhausted. So from Wednesday until yesterday, I was completely spent, anxious, restless, exhausted. I had a massage, we went to the movies, I cheated and had 4 pieces of pizza. So good. And I slept so well, and I woke up this morning, and I think the effects of the massage just sunk in, because today I feel great, and I was so calm, and I've been praying like a ton, and meditating, and just wanting to share this different side of my upbringing and this recovery program that I'm so grateful for. And I was speaking with someone earlier, a newcomer for her first meeting, and it didn't dawn on me until she said tonight was her first meeting, and I'm so grateful of how things transpire with my higher power bringing me here, because it was a year ago today that I walked through these doors to my first speaker meeting. So it's my 1 year anniversary. So a little bit out of things, where I was, victimhood. Our family, on my dad's side, was Aztec Indian. There were 14, 7 brothers, 7 sisters. I had a grandmother. I never knew my grandfather. On my mom's side, she was the only girl. There were 3 boys and a girl. And we did everything together. It was so much fun. There were parties and weddings and anniversaries. We got together with all the holidays. And towards the end of whatever festivity we were celebrating, there was always a park nearby, either by my grandmother's or my aunt's and uncle's house. We always ended up playing ball, as my dad called it, or basketball. It was so much fun. And I had tons of male cousins, and a lot of female cousins, but the females were either 6 to 10 years younger than me or 10 years older than me. So I grew up with the boys. Like, at the core of me, I was a tomboy. I didn't like to brush my hair. I still don't, but I try. Today, my grandmother had a little nickname for me. I'm not going to say it. And it was just amazing. We had fun and played in the mud and played in the dirt. And I was the only child for about 6 years, and my dad was a boxer, and he was a ball player, according to him. He grew up in Compton. He took me to all the practices when I was 4 and 5 years old that he coached with my uncles and my niece, and I got to practice at the end. They let me run around the bases, and I just fell in love with sports, and I still participate today. In short, the other side of the story, at the end of all the activities, there was a lot of drinking from everybody. And at the end, I remember just the sheer terror, not showing any expression or crying, but just the sheer terror inside and this tremor of my dad trying to kill one of his brothers and people trying to pry him off. And it wasn't just his family members, but it was strangers. I grew up playing softball, and I remember one time a car had driven by after a softball tournament. We were walking back to our cars after dinner, and my dad went up to the car because the car almost brushed him and knocked on the window and wanted to get the guy out of the car and beat the crap out of him. So it was just confusing. There was this wonderful side, but at home, it was crazy, it was insane, it was chaos, and I thought it was normal. He was a disciplinarian. He was really strict. I know now from being in this program that it's probably what he learned from his parents, so I don't blame him. I have compassion, but I don't have a relationship with them today. They're very toxic for me. My very early years growing up, I was scared to death of my dad. He used to beat me and shove me in a dark closet and lock me in a closet half naked because he hit me so hard I would wet my pants, or shove me under the bed and I would just black out. And those memories right now are really resurfacing. They've been stirring for the past several months, and I'm like, whoa, it's kind of intense for me to feel anything, because growing up in that home, I wasn't allowed to feel. I wasn't allowed to talk about anything. I wasn't allowed to tell any secrets. The police were at our house a lot of the time, or other aunts and uncles, trying to pry my dad off my mom, who used to beat her all the time. He would pull out his shotguns. He would pull out knives. It was just horrific, and I was so torn when my mom was crying for me to get help, and my dad was pleading for me not to. I do remember one time going around the corner and getting the neighbor, and I told him that my dad had a knife, and he just stopped in his tracks, and he wouldn't even come in the house. So that was the upbringing. I left home when I was 18. I had all these wonderful survival skills that I had no idea that I had. I would numb myself out. I would shut my emotions down. When I played sports, I had really bad injuries. For some reason, when I was younger, I had really weak ankles, and I would bloody my ankles so bad when I sprained them. I know I broke the first one when I was in seventh grade, and my dad wouldn't speak to me. There was a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. And with broken bones and the injuries that I had from playing sports, being really aggressive, I wouldn't cry. I remember that broken bone. My dad yelled at me for 30 minutes. I slipped in some water on my roller skates, and I sat with my bottom all wet while he yelled at me for 30 minutes. He was in this rage. And finally, my mom took me to the emergency room, and I tried to pretend like my ankle wasn't broken, and I fell off the table. But I didn't cry. You know, I could feel the pain. The adrenaline had set in, and it was hell. I think there was the good part with my loving family members. I still have this favorite aunt and uncle that should have been my parents. They don't drink. They're amazing. But the other part where I just went through these first several years of life, even through high school, trying to commit suicide a few times, I was really self-destructive. I was a risk taker. I liked to hitchhike with my girlfriends, with the scariest, creepy guys. I'm like, come on, who cares? We'll be fine. You know, we're going to the beach or whatever. And there were a lot of perpetrators in my life, and that continued in my relationships, I think, through adulthood for a little while. I didn't have any self-esteem when I left home. My spirit was completely broken, and I was just crushed. I had no idea who I was, and all the self-destructive things that I was doing to myself were to fill that void of daddy doesn't love me, because the messages that I left home with were, you're fat, no one's ever going to want you, we don't love you, what's wrong with you, if only she would stop. And the cycle of abuse also was, I ran away, started running away when I was in the eighth grade, because my dad would just rip me a new one and tell me how I was a waste of his time and I was stupid. He would humiliate me in the worst ways in public. I remember a couple times after softball practice, he had just finished batting practice, and I was walking away. I took the helmet off, and he slammed me in the head with the softball, and I just stood there. Didn't cry, and just took it and walked away. No emotions. And that whole time, I couldn't understand why I was so confused, and all these predators were pursuing me, and I just allowed them into my life. There was sexual abuse. There is a history of sexual abuse in our family with the male uncles and cousins, and I didn't know until I came into these rooms that that's common. I never talked about it. I didn't understand. People would tell me, it didn't happen, it's not a big deal. And a few years ago, well, more than a few years ago, but I did find out that my mom knew the whole time, and she just protected my dad. You know, I was just crushed. I just could not understand, because besides him wailing on me, she would also take out everything on me. She'd break brushes over my head. I'd get the paddles broken over my head, over my bottom. My dad would drag me out of bed and accuse me of taking drugs. I did drink, and my drug was Dexatrem, because they told me in high school that I wasn't thin enough. But he was just paranoid, and I can see how broken he was. And I ended up here in these rooms for me, because I've been searching my whole life for something to fill this void. I think my higher power, I know, has always been in my life. When I was in fourth grade, somehow this blue, big blue school bus church picked me up and on Sundays, and I got the hell out of there, because when my dad was home on the weekends, he was just hell on wheels being sober. It wasn't fun at all. You know, so I went to different churches. Then my dad found religion, which he tried to hide his drinking behind. The beatings with my mom stopped, and again, I left home when I was 18. I just didn't want to be there. I didn't know what I was going to do. But another awakening that I had, going back a little bit, in eighth grade, I remember walking across the campus at junior high, and I just thought, I'm going to college. My parents don't even have a college education. I wasn't exposed to any of that. The emphasis was on play sports. You have to move out when you're 18. If you embarrass us, I will disown you. And you're going to save some money, get married, have some kids. I'm like, ugh, okay. But in the eighth grade, I don't know, something happened, and I just said, I'm going to go to college. I don't know what it's going to take or how I'm going to get there, but I'm going. And I did. You know, without their help, I didn't want to take a penny, because every time I tried to do something on my own, they just shut me down. And how did you do that? And you can't do that. And you're stupid. And you don't have your priorities straight. And it was on and on and on forever until I finally, I moved away from home about 7 years ago this past May. I don't have a relationship with them today. I can't. Because when I left there again, I started sinking into this deep despair, and I was having extreme anxiety and being suicidal at the age of, what, 41, 42. I was just like, what is wrong with me? I don't know what's going on. Like, things are getting better, but not with them. With them in my life, I'm just a mess. And to that day, when I left, my dad would still try to physically come after me and bully me. And I wasn't ready to fight back, but I was ready to let him hit me, and I was ready to call the police. And I didn't have, you know, this program at all. I didn't have any of this. And a while ago, I think I was really upset as to, God, I've gone to so many really good counselors, and I've gone to churches and found therapy and Bible studies. Why did no one ever tell me that my dad was an alcoholic, or that there were these programs of recovery out there so I could get some help for me? And I'm grateful for them, because when I used to run away, they did send me to counseling, because again, I was the problem. If she would stop running away, things will get better. And I would run away, go back home. It would be all nice for 3 weeks, and then the cycle would just start again. It was just chaos and the hitting. And I think the last time I ran away, I was in high school, I was a junior in high school, and I had been gone for about a month and a half. And then when I went back, they stuck me in a group home. And it was like an interrogation with the person who was admitting me, with my mom sitting right there again, never able to protect me. She didn't have her own voice or words or any of that in her upbringing. But the counselor was trying to get me to admit that I was on drugs, that I was taking drugs. That's why I was running away all the time. And I was just like, you know, and I just sat there and I cried, and I thought, I almost told my mom later when she had brought up, she's like, I knew you weren't on drugs. I'm like, what the hell? You know, why wouldn't you say something and stand up for me? And I almost, at that point where he was just trying to break me, I almost just gave in, and to get him to shut up, say, yeah, I take Dexatrem all the time so I won't eat, so I can stay thin and get thinner. You know, I'm supposed to be thinner. So those were some of the survival experiences. I've been in this program for a year. June 29th was my year anniversary, and I was in Al-Anon first for the past 3 years. I have an amazing sponsor who's like a mother to me that I never had. She lives up in the Central Coast. I just went and visited my home group last week, and she calls me her other daughter. So we have this amazing relationship, and I love her, because growing up with boys and my dad, she's really direct and she's honest, and I need that. It's like, don't sugarcoat it. Don't be, oh, I love the sweetie stuff too, but it's like, be honest with me. If I'm going to ask you a question, tell me, what do I need to do? And even before she became my sponsor, she was really honest with me. She's like, the things you've shared, I see you repeating these cycles, and if you don't stop, you're going to have to repeat this lesson again. So she recommended, after I moved here about 3 years ago, because again, I was, the anxiety was coming up and I didn't know what was going on. I'm still dealing with the feelings and the memories. She recommended ACA. She's like, I think it's time you go to ACA. And I said, okay, I'll go. I went. I came to the speaker meeting. I think I went to a few meetings, and it was just a little too intense. I wasn't ready yet, because again, I shut down, I isolate, I hold everything in, and it wasn't until last year, I think around this time in the summer, through November, that my body just couldn't handle it anymore. I started to get really tight, and everything ached from my hips down to the backs of my legs, and I was really stressed, and what the hell is going on? I take care of myself, I'm a yoga instructor, so I should be nice and bendy and flexible, and I was having a lot of problems, and I just realized that all the pain was resurfacing again, and if I didn't do something about it, if I kept going 5,000 miles a minute like I like to do, because growing up, I wasn't allowed to ever sleep in, so I get up at 4:15 in the morning still, sometimes, not all the time, I'm getting better. But I realized that if I didn't make some changes, it wasn't going to get better, and I didn't want to keep repeating some of the same lessons and using those old broken survival skills that I didn't need anymore, because I had already had this other foundation with the fellowship that I felt safe, and I felt like I was at home, and I felt like this was my team, and I could open up, and I heard people share things that I haven't even come out of my mouth yet. I'm like, oh, somebody else experienced that too? Really? It was that bad? Like, I didn't imagine it and make it up like my parents used to tell me and slap me across the face and whatever else. So I stopped for a little while, and last year I thought I was going to go back. I used to be a special ed teacher. I thought I was going to go back into teaching full time, and I had this special contract for 3 months, and about a month into it, when my body was aching and I was still getting up at 4:15 in the morning and taking care of everybody else like I like to do, you know, all the kids and the parents and the staff and trying to please it, I was exhausted and ignoring my amazing husband, who were newly married 3 years, and not being present for myself, I just decided I needed to make a change because it's not going to get better. So I quit, I'm done, I'm retired, but I moved on to something else that I love because yoga and sports have always been alongside me this whole time, and so now I teach full time, and I kicked it off with going to Nicaragua and just resting for about 10 days with a girlfriend, and I'm going back again this November. And in January, I think I was ready. I had heard some other people speak here. I was ready to start working the steps, getting a sponsor, resolving these things, feeling these ugly, painful feelings, and especially the memories that come up that I don't want to remember, and then I remember clearly. So I got a sponsor, and I meet with her regularly. She's helped me. I ask lots of questions, especially when I'm confused about authority figures. I don't like criticism. My dad was highly critical and judgmental, and especially, I think, against women. He always made comments about just certain groups and certain high-powered women, and he couldn't stand them, and how could you do that, and you can't do this, and he was always putting me down. Even the last time we spoke, I'd wished him a happy birthday a few years ago, I think right after my brother had passed away. Some family members and I were planning a surprise get-together that we were just going to make it a little bit bigger. And instead of coming to me, he would always beat around the bush and not be honest and not call me and talk to me, but instead badmouth me and say mean things. And one of my dear cousins, who was older, like a mentor to me, said, I think you better talk to my dad. His dad was the patriarch of our family. He was the oldest. He said, I think you better tell him why you don't talk to your parents and tell him about the drinking and why your brother really died, because he died of a disease. So I didn't really go into detail because I don't really trust men fully, but I did talk to my uncle. And then finally I had the courage. I had another lady in my life who became a really good friend. She said, pick up the phone and call your dad. Just ask him what's going on. I'm like, okay. So I had a meeting in San Luis Obispo. I remember it was a Thursday, January 13th. It was his birthday. And the party was that weekend. And my brother had just passed away. It had been about 6 months. And I was going to Orange County like every other weekend almost. And I call my dad and I ask him, what's going on? You know, we're trying to plan something really nice. And he denied it and he started calling me all kinds of names. And I was scared to death sitting in my car, even though he was 5 hours away. I was shaking. And something inside me just said, no, no more. That is absolutely enough. I'm so done. And I had the courage, I think because I've had this strong relationship with my higher power, to say, that's enough. I'm done. I moved from Orange County because of you. I know you lied to my mom. I know all the abuse that you did to me. You don't have to admit it, but I'm done. And I'm not talking to you anymore. That's it. You cannot be a part of my life. And happy birthday, Dad, and I love you, but I will not be there this weekend. And I hung up. I mean, we got into yelling match. I've never, ever yelled at my dad or raised my voice because he's always backhanded me or grabbed me by the throat and slammed me against the wall. But I was brave that day in the car, 5 hours away. And it felt good. I was like, oh my gosh. You know, I'm shaking just thinking about it right now. And so the weekend went on and they had their get together and one of my favorite cousins called and she's like, it turned out really nice. You all did a really good job. And she said, I think he felt really bad. I'm like, but that wasn't the point. I didn't want him to feel bad. And I realized in this program that my huge part in this disease is I always kept going back for more. And I didn't understand. I just thought, if I like turn this way or do backflips or go this way or crawl, you know, say I love you or something different, it'll just change. It'll be better this time. And it never, ever, ever was. And I have other people in my family that just were always saying, they didn't get the disease. They were always saying, be the bigger person and call him on his birthday and call him on Thanksgiving. And I'm just like, I'm done. I don't even talk to them anymore. I'm like, no, you know, and I have these skills and these tools now where it's, no, I don't have to talk to you and I don't have to explain myself. I can love you from a distance and detach physically, and that's what I need to do for me right now, because it's not just my dad's disease, it's this family disease, and we've had so many, many deaths. I think there's been like a dozen. There's one every other year at least from alcoholism and drugs. And my dad's dad that I never knew, my dad was 12 years old, and he died of the disease. He went into cardiac arrest. He's the third one that I know of that went to cardiac arrest. Or he was the first one. My dad had an older sister, and my brother was the third. And his pattern was the same. He was separated from my grandmother because he had been beating her and drinking a lot and taking drugs. So our family, it's so sad. No one is in recovery. This huge family, there's been so many deaths and so much grief, but nobody talks about it because it's part of our culture. The drugs and the drinking and, oh, you should just go to church and you'll feel better and do better and, you know, whatever else. So I explain how I found ACA. Where am I at today? Right now, I'm working the steps. I use the tools. I pray every morning, especially the past couple days. I've been praying like a ton. I meditate because sometimes when I hop out of bed, I think I have to do 30,000 things, and that's what kept me safe when I was growing up. So I just had an awakening a few months ago that I shared with my sponsor, being married and finally living with a male for the first time ever, full time since I grew up. It used to be when I grew up at home, every day at 3:30, before I was in junior high and high school playing sports, my dad would come home, come through the doors, and either be really nice or beat the crap out of me. So this anxiety started coming up around that time, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And I called my sponsor one day, and I told her, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my first marriage. I've never lived with a man ever full time. I had boyfriends who wanted me to move in, and I just could not go there. And I think this is what's going on. And I know my husband's not going to do that. He's amazing and he's loving. But I said, I think this just needs to work through my system. So she encouraged me, get out of the house. Can you go to the beach? I'm like, yeah. So I went to the beach. So every day around 2:30, I make a plan to go to the library or get out with some girlfriends or go for a walk because it still comes up. It's just all this anxiety that needs to be worked out. And I think the biggest key that I've learned as well in this program is I'm learning to embrace that anxiety and the fear and the memories and the sadness and the grief. I hate crying. I brought some Kleenex and I grabbed the box from the bathroom because that was what I was struggling with the other night on Wednesday when I was thinking about what am I going to share. Like, and I was crying. Like most of the time, I'm like, I don't want to cry. I wasn't allowed to cry when I grew up. If I cry, am I going to be weak? But I cried a little bit before today, so I think I'm good. I might cry a little later. But and yesterday too. But so I use the tools and the steps I pray every day to my higher power, and sometimes I just have to ask for help. Like, help me get out of bed and get dressed, and help me pay the bills, just with the simplest things, because my mind is spinning and I'm still pretty anxious some of the times. I'm really high energy, so my drug, I shared this with my other home group the other day, as I had 30,000 things packed into my schedule Tuesday. And some things I canceled, and I knew I needed to go slow. I've been practicing going slow and taking breaks for myself, you know, reparenting myself and being kind to my inner child. I could just feel all the emotion coming up, and I'm like, oh, holy shit, here we go. So I got in my car, and I was of service. I had an appointment, threw the dog in the back, grabbed some clothes for this women's shelter. And as I was driving down the street, it wasn't very far, I thought, wouldn't it be so much flippin' easier if I was just a damn alcoholic? I wouldn't have to feel anything. And I thought, no, because I would probably drink myself to death. You know? So my addiction is just to keep moving and just stay out of your way and just do. And not slow down, but I'm really learning how to do that. So the other part is the laundry list. I identify with more than half the things, and right now I really struggle with being frightened by angry people because my dad was this raging maniac most of the time. Sometimes he was happy when he was drunk, but there was a lot of personal criticism and, like I said, shame. There was neglect and abandonment. I had to grow up really quick and take care of a younger brother and sister. Sister who's 6 years younger and a brother was 10 years younger. And I had to take care of them all the time. And if I didn't take care of them perfectly, I was hit. You know, if I didn't fold their clothes or whatever I was supposed to do. I think the biggest other thing is we have an overdeveloped sense of responsibility. It is easier for us to be concerned with others rather than ourselves. This enables us not to look too closely at our own faults, etc. And that's another awakening I've had around working these steps is I could clearly see how my dad was really controlling and my mom was really controlling. She was an untreated Al-Anon. And now I can see how when I don't want to look at all this scary stuff and all these painful emotions, I'll start to pick on number one over there, the chair, my husband. I look at his stuff and look at his mess, and oh my gosh, his life is so unmanageable, when it's really me, you know, because of all the pain, and I don't know how to deal with it. I feel like I'm just learning how to grow up, and especially in a first-time marriage. I don't know what to do. I mean, before in my relationships, everybody loved me. I did everything they wanted. I straightened my hair because one boyfriend didn't like it curly. I wore dresses all the time, and I didn't talk. I didn't even have a voice. You know, it was pretty sad. I wasn't smiling. I just put on a smile. Well, I put on a smile, but inside, I was just depressed, and I felt really pathetic, and it's like, okay, he likes me. Yeah, you should go out with him. He likes you, and he has some money. Oh, okay, sure. You know, just like, and now, after a few relationships that were mimicking my parents' relationship with different types of addictions and abuse, it's just like, I have a voice, and it feels good. I feel a little bit sometimes too strong because I have a voice and I'm not used to it. One of my other friends said, I feel like a bitch. I'm like, yeah, I don't feel like that. Sorry, my sister has a PhD in that, but I didn't get that. I didn't get that gene. I got the doormat gene. give you my shirt. And I still struggle with, I judge myself really harshly because I have a pretty low sense of self-esteem still. I still want to please people, and I've realized through working these steps in this program and talking to my sponsor that a couple months ago I was involved in some service, and it was just making me so sick to my stomach. I had a migraine headache, and I thought, what the hell am I doing? I'm trying to please this person. Why? It's supposed to be for all of us being of service, and I told my husband, I said, please hold me accountable. If I get the itch to volunteer or move, you can just sit on me. And he said, okay. So, and I understand, number 13, alcoholism is a family disease. We're all a part of it. It was so sick growing up in our family. Even my brother and sister were involved on telling me, something's wrong with you and you're crazy. And I was like, okay, I'm nuts. I don't know. What am I doing wrong? I'm trying to run away and survive. And you know, I did drink a little bit of alcohol, but I'm not addicted. My husband's even told me, I don't think you have to worry. I think one time I sent a drink back to the bar because it was way too strong. He said, I never would have done that. I'm like, whoa, I like kind of like margaritas sometimes, but this was a few years ago. But I sent it back, and he's like, yeah, I don't think you have a problem. And I shared that with my sponsor. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I should have any wine or anything. What if, like, I can't stop drinking? And then a few days went by, and I remember calling her, and I said, we were answering one of the questions in one of the steps about addictions, and I'm like, well, I do have some addictions. I said, I can share these with you. I said, I've been craving apple pie since January that I've given up. Make a homemade apple pie. And this all-American, I call it to die for, chocolate cake that we had at our wedding from Costco. I'm buying it next week, by the way. I've been waiting patiently. I'm like, those are my addiction problems. But now, you know, life is good. And not all the time, because I still struggle. And I still get up. And I think, shouldn't I have it all together? What is wrong with me? But I remember it's a family disease, and I'm constantly reminded by amazing fellow travelers who are my girlfriends now and my sponsor and my husband that it's okay to cry and it's one day at a time and your recovery is not going to happen overnight. But I want it to, like, right now, and then I'll be better. I know I'm never going to graduate from this program. It's something I've been looking for my whole life, but it's hard and it's really uncomfortable, especially on the days where I have to sometimes get on my knees and pray. Just say, I don't know what to do. I don't want to feel this. Just help me. And I have to stop myself when I try to get into that mode of moving. My moving is to go exercise. Oh, I'll go take a yoga class, or I'll go run on the beach for like 3 hours or something. So I just want to end with some affirmations and the promises. I read the promises. I'm getting into reading them every day, and they're amazing because I see the small glimpses of the spiritual awakenings and the miracles, the miracle of marriage. I never ever wanted to get married because of what I saw my parents go through. It was hell. And then the relationships that I was in and the crap that I put up with and people telling me, like how my dad used to manipulate me and say, oh, you didn't see that, it was this way. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess you're right. I deserve to get hit because he was drunk or whatever. So number one, we will discover our real identities by loving and accepting ourselves. And that's something that I'm truly working on with the help of being in this recovery and working with my sponsor. Two, our self-esteem will increase and we will give ourselves approval on a daily basis. I'm still working on that too. It's coming in small doses. Three, fear of authority figures and need to people please will leave us. And I've definitely recognized my need to people please and the fear of authority figures. I check in with my fellow travelers and sponsors, say, is it okay to change my mind, or this doesn't feel right to me? And they're like, yeah, no, you're on the right track. Four, our ability to share intimacy will grow inside us. My husband always used to say, and I didn't pay attention until a little while ago, that I was so guarded and I was so rigid, and it's just like, keep going, and then my shoulders would ache and I wouldn't really want to share anything of the smallest detail of what was going on with me. Every day he'd get home, he thought I was pissed off, and finally I'd tell him, I'm just mad at me because I don't have it all together and I haven't cleaned the whole house and I haven't painted the neighbor's yard or mowed their lawn or you know, all that other stuff. But I'm slowly, thanks to this program, sharing things with him, and it's getting easier for me. But again, with male figures, I didn't have that trust. I did not trust my parents at all. I just learned not to trust them. I didn't trust me. So it was a huge challenge. Five, we face our abandonment issues. We will be attracted by strengths and become more tolerant of weaknesses. Six, we will enjoy feeling stable, peaceful, financially secure. And those things are all coming. We will learn how to play and have fun. And that's been one of the themes because my sponsors have encouraged me to have fun. So tonight, usually what would throw me for a tailspin, my shoes tore, but I have my Wonder Woman socks on. So thanks to my mother-in-law, she asked what I wanted for Christmas, and I love her dearly because she is so giving and she puts so much thought into when she does things for my husband and I. And I thought, I'm going to have fun this year. So I sent her, she shops on Amazon Prime, and I sent her a couple socks, and she got me all these Wonder Woman socks. I'm like, I'm going to wear these. And my husband made me a crown at this craft thing. So he came home one day when I was having a hard day. I was sitting on the stool, and I'm like, okay, hit my crown on. I'm trying to feel a little bit better. Eight, we will choose to love people who can love and be responsible for themselves. And I think the biggest challenge for me is I'm responsible for everybody else, but I'm trying to learn how to be responsible for me in the smallest ways, to honor myself and be true to myself first so I can be true to my husband and true to other people. And and to help other people by spreading this message. 9, healthy boundaries and limits will become easier for us to set. Oh yeah, this is getting so much easier and it feels really good. I have to check in sometimes because I feel like I'm being mean and selfish. Again, those are some messages that I left home with. I wasn't allowed to say no, I was the yes girl. And if I did start to veer off and try to do my own thing, again, I get slapped across the face. But now, after I draw the line and make the healthy boundary and let it settle, it feels really good. And I'm starting to move a little bit slower and understand. But even if people that I've told things, set this boundary with, keep repeating or crossing the boundary, I just back off and I don't say anything. I just kind of completely disengage. 10, fears of failure and success will leave us and we will intuitively make healthier choices. 11, with help from our ACA support group, we will slowly release our dysfunctional behaviors. And that's what's coming up a lot. Again, I shared about the survival skills, always needing to move, always running away, not wanting to sit still. That's slowly going by the wayside, probably at a glacial pace, I'm sure. 12, gradually, with our higher power's help, we will learn to expect the best and to get it. And that's one of my prayers. Just, I expect the best today. For me, whatever my higher power has in store. I think I all of these went. And then these are some affirmations that I say to myself from step 1. I am powerless over the effects of alcoholism and family dysfunction. I am powerless over the laundry list traits. My life is unmanageable when I focus on others rather than myself. And I'm really having a greater understanding on how I need to keep the focus on me, even if I have to pray it 10 times a day. And I think along with that, I'll stop myself and say, okay, what's going to make me happy? I don't need to look at his stuff or her stuff, but how if I just clean the closet or fold my clean laundry that's been there for a few days? And then those feelings, those anxious feelings, they pass. 4, I did not cause my parents addiction or dysfunction. And through these rooms and these meetings, I clearly understand that it's a dysfunction and an addiction, and I didn't cause it. I finally know I wasn't at fault ever for any of it. 5, my feelings and thoughts are separate from the thoughts of my parents and my family. Yes. 6, I can stop trying to heal or change my family through my current relationships. I can stop trying to change others. 7, I can stop condemning myself without mercy. And 8, I love this one, I am a valuable person. The solution is, I'm working on becoming my own loving parent. I had never heard of any of those words or that terminology, but I think the past couple of months, now I know this stirring and this intense person that's inside of me that's telling me that I'm doing everything wrong and I'm not good enough and I should be faster and thinner and blah, 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 blah. And really, I don't drink coffee because I'm fast enough already. But yeah, I shared with my sponsor, I'm like, oh my gosh, the other day I had to tell my critical parent to shut the heck up and get in the back seat. And she gave me a high five. I'm like, now I get it. She just is like, ah, you need to do all this stuff. And then I found this really cool quote. Let's see, I have a couple more things. I love the reading that Haley read. And then this really cool quote as I was reading, I love the onion, but I don't like to cry, so I don't like onions, but I found one about the artichoke. It's a spiritual lesson, so I'm an artichoke, about the artichoke. It says, sometimes we put up armor in order to protect ourselves. Each experience of being hurt or taken advantage of adds another layer between the core of who we are and the outside world. As a necessary act, we learn from nature survival. It's a necessary act we learn from nature, a survival tactic. Just like the artichoke, though, I can't really see. If you take the time to peel back the armor, you'll find that we all have soft, sustaining hearts underneath. Artichokes teach us that while connection doesn't always come easily, sometimes it takes work to peel back the spikes. I definitely have spikes that I'm trying to get rid of. It is worth the work to get to the tender, true, and loving centers of ourselves and each other. And that just kind of hit home. I read that last night. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I'm an artichoke. And hopefully I'll be there one of these days. And then the last, I just wanted to read the honesty again. With the help of ACA, we're offering our parents fairness as we look at the family system with rigorous honesty. We're looking for the truth so that we can live our own lives with choice and self-confidence. We want to break the cycle of family dysfunction. "What is honesty?" asked the old man. "Telling the truth," I said. He raised his eyebrows and replied, "That's only half of the answer. The other part is consistency, which means telling the truth all the time." How many times do we tell half-truths? "Yes, I'd be glad to do that," we say, but deep down inside, we're already shaming ourselves for giving in. "So what's wrong?" someone asks. We answer, "Nothing." When our hearts are so broken, we'd like to end it all. Or the phone rings in the middle of the night, and we cheerfully answer, like all is right with the world. When working with Steps in ACA, we have the privilege of practicing rigorous honesty with a fellow traveler. We want to break the chains that hold us in bondage, to stop repeating the same ineffective behavior. We're tired of failed relationships, verbal abuse, and isolation. We truly want to find peace and serenity. We courageously walk through the swamps, hand in hand with our fellow traveler, armed with honesty to face the truth. We want a better life. We make room for the good stuff that we deserve. On this day, I will be mindful in the present moment and be honest. I will make healthy choices and thank my higher power for encouragement that got me here. So today, I love this reading today. I didn't read it this morning either, but this program is helping me really get honest with the feelings that are coming up, because the anger is bubbling up, and I've asked people, am I allowed to be angry? And they said yes. And it's not just the anger, but it's this rage that's inside from all the abuse. And I have a healthy outlet. I'm going to start on Thursday because I can't really run right now. I have an injured knee, or else I'd be running for miles. But I need a release to let it out, because it's like, I don't know what to do with it. Where do I put it? And am I supposed to feel this way? Because I was never allowed to express any anger. But it's definitely rage against just all the abuse that I endured growing up from my parents, from uncles, from cousins, from the neighbor, from a guy who tried to violate me when I was in college. So I thank you for being here today, and thanks for being my family, and you have a great night.